It's got a death curse.
Soon, all of you will be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Has Tony ever told you anything about this place? About the Overlook Hotel?
Is there something bad here?
King has said that he was whacked on coke when he wrote this, so...
It shows.
Yeah.
We're gonna make a new rule. Whenever I'm in here, you hear me typing.
But whether you don't hear me typing, nor the fuck I'm doing, if I'm in here, don't fucking come in.
Why don't you start right now and get the fuck out of here?
He's a failure as a human being. He's a terrible father. He's a wife-abusing piece of shit who gets locked in a hotel and goes nuts after 5 months and goes back to drinking.
No need to rub it in, Mr. Grady.
I don't have to really connect with an actor or an actress. I don't have to be in their shoes. Maybe I want to hear their story. Maybe I want to find out that they're pretty freaky.
I'm very confused. I just...
You've had your whole fucking life to think things over. What good's a few minutes more gonna do you now?
She was mentally tortured to the point where she's legitimately got mental issues now because of what happened to her in this film.
Yeah, what you're watching when you're watching the final cut of this film is a woman having a real nervous breakdown. Yeah.
Technically, it is... I suppose you could say it is a masterpiece. There's a reason why there's like documentaries about, right. You know, this movie.
Wendy, I'm home.
This is supposed to be the cherry on top of the fucking theme. The Shining.
Don't hurt me.
I'm not gonna hurt you.
Stay away from me.
Wendy.
Stay away.
Darling, light of my life. I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains.
This is Cash Wampum, your host of the Horror 101 podcast, and this show is coming at you at the end of the year 2020, and what a batshit insane year it's been.
What's next? Frogs and locusts?
Could be.
We'll have to see what 2021 shovels into our lap. In the meantime, we hope you had an excellent Christmas or whatever holiday you chose to celebrate this past week, and now on to business. This is going to be the final show in our haunted theme. The crew wanted to cover something fantastic for you, something everyone is or should be familiar with. In the end, we decided to test the station's destructive power on The Shining, the original Stanley Kubrick 1980 cinematic adaptation of Stephen King's novel. This is a film that has been in most top 10 horror film lists for 40 years now. There are documentaries about the making of this film. The Shining is an example of what happens when you give an insane genius carte blanche to make a terrifying horror film. You cannot make films like this anymore, my friends. This is going to be the cherry on top of our haunted place theme. And if you think we're going to spend this show mindlessly filleting a classic, guess again. This may be one of the more critical takes on The Shining that you come across in your horror community. We want to thank you for coming back and spending time with us. Consider becoming a patron if you're a fan of the show. And let's get this bird flying, shall we? I hear a McPherson.
Yes, there's a Nick there.
I hear a McPherson skulking around.
Oh my God, he's got... Oh, dear God. Oh my God.
Oh, thank you.
He brings me rye.
What is this?
Everybody knows the weight of my heart is
goodness,
through 40%
rye. I was going to say, I'm going to buy one for your birthday, so that's my other one.
Oh my God, thank you so kindly.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to have that New Year's. That is a New Year's special.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, I will put this in the appropriate spot.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Nick brings booze. Yeah, you are most welcome here.
I haven't tried that. Not much, though.
No. Okay.
Thank you, everyone, for coming to this impromptu recording session.
Otherwise, I will go out and go buy a fucking dictionary, because not impromptu.
The dinner was almost impromptu.
Helen made the dinner.
Thought about it all week.
It was premeditated.
Okay.
Premeditated murder. I mean, dinner.
There's impromptu alcohol.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the topic on hand. Paul B.
Short arms.
Paul B.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate that you waited so long, but now go ahead, hate on it. Go ahead. Have the first fucking laugh. What do you got to say about The Shining?
It's overrated.
It's overrated. Why?
Last half or more completely falls off the cliff. It's like everything that Kubrick ever made. Begins amazingly, has some spots towards the end that are good, but for the most part, just falls right off the cliff. He cannot finish the film.
A Full Metal Jacket, I'll give you. The first half of the movie, everything in boot camp
is amazing.
It's great.
In the first 20 minutes in Vietnam, fine.
And then it sucks.
And then it just sucks.
Doctor Strangelove has a great ending.
Nick is the big anti-Kubrick guy.
Nick and I are on the same page about this.
When he is adapting, certain things he does well. To be honest, The Shining, I don't even really entirely blame on Kubrick. I blame it on King, because King also has a problem with fucking endings.
Oh, he does, totally.
So you're basically, it's like a perfect storm of taking two people who, like, is it meticulously shot? Yes. Honestly, I think he missed his calling as just staying as a documentarian. Like, he really, you know, as a feature film director, I find his work very sterile. It doesn't really elicit much emotion from me. It's like I've never really gotten, aside from the first half of Full Metal Jacket, like, most of his work really, like, even watching 2001, like,
it's very cerebral.
I wouldn't even say that. Like, I go by the word sterile. Like, it's very...
Paint by numbers.
I wouldn't even say... Yeah, maybe. It's very methodical. It's overthought and underfelt. Like, it's just... I don't feel like he's trying to elicit anything from me. He's just trying to show me something.
He likes his vanishing point, dead center of camera.
Yeah.
Everything perfectly centered in frame.
Hey, and I have a thing for symmetry, so I totally get that. Yeah. Like, I will watch one of his movies, and I will appreciate it for the technical aspects of it, absolutely. I just don't feel like he has ever really made a film that has... elicited feeling from me. Like, there are lesser directors who are made sloppy ass movies that I've gotten feeling from.
Okay, all right. But
Kubrick is like that for all his films, though.
Is part of the reason why I don't like Kubrick.
Fair enough. But I mean, we have to know that's his pattern. So set that aside.
Yeah.
I can appreciate it because that's his style.
Yeah.
So we like different directors, different writers, different styles. So this is one style that. I don't mind it. I don't mind Clockwork Orange. I don't mind all the other movies that he's done just because it's different. It's different than anything else. I don't have to really connect with an actor or an actress. I don't have to be in their shoes. Maybe I want to hear their story. Maybe I want to find out that they're pretty freaky. You know what I mean? There's certain things that it's refreshing. It's a change from somebody that's something normal.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys haven't told you. I'm not saying your opinions are
incorrect. Yeah, just his style has never done anything
and
for me.
And that's fair. And that's fair.
It's kind of like Christopher Nolan. Like, I watch his movies once. I really, really enjoy them. But I've never gone back and rewatched them again.
Okay, so this is supposed to be the cherry on top of the fucking theme. The Shining.
It's like one of the most famous haunted house.
Do you want me to be honest, or do you want me to ask his?
No, absolutely. I want honesty. Absolutely. Like Superstition, you shit all over it. That's fine. Yeah. That everybody, I don't want to coerce anybody into giving me false testament for anything that we.
I will say this: I'm not going to shit on this. I'm not going to shit on it. I just don't have a connection to it.
Right. When's the last time you watched it?
The last time I'd have to say about 10 years ago. I don't remember exactly.
Okay.
But
I think. That part of the reason a lot of people like this show is the fact that we are real. Like, if we watch, okay, let's cover this film, we watch it, and some of us like it, and the other ones are like, that was fucking shit. They like hearing about that. It's not like we're not James Corbetting everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying, right, Pants? I know you like the guy. Oh, this is amazing. This is wonderful. I love
Jimmy Fallon. Everything's great.
Exactly. No, we're not about that. It's like we're gonna give this a good critical eye, and if we love it, we love it, and if we don't, we don't.
Well, honestly, say I understand why this is on pretty much every top 100 film list,
particularly Ghost Story list. Yeah, right?
and I still recommend, like, even though I'm not a huge fan of Kubrick, I still do like this movie, like, in air quotes. Like, I don't hate it.
I think a lot of our listeners are going to be very surprised that a lot of you are very critical about this film. But this was before we watched
this
it again.
This is the first viewing, though.
But so. I also find that Kubrick's kind of given a, carte blanche. Like, it's almost like...
Oh, he certainly was. He was one of those directors where, like, he had no schedule, he had no budget, he just... They were like, make this film. If he wanted to stop production at, like, $30,000 an hour and go play chess with somebody for 12 hours and leave everybody in the wings, he was able to do it.
What?
You cannot make a kind of film like this guy made anymore. This You can't do it anymore.
He was only making, like, one movie every 7 or 8 years. He was not a very prolific filmmaker.
Well, his last film was Shut, and then what was his last...
AI.
Spielberg had to finish it.
Yeah, well, it started out Kubrick, but he died or got sick.
And that movie, you very specifically can tell
what when was the Kubrick. Transition.
Yeah, like you can feel the difference in that movie.
There's no denying the man was a genius. The man was like 180 IQ. He was a fucking genius. Absolutely. Was he a tyrant? Yes.
Shelley Duvall.
Let us watch The Shining again, and we will re-reflect and discuss after this. Nude, hit the lights. Let's get the shit going.
Get the show.
I'll get the lights in the bathroom. Just start with the movie anyway. I've seen it.
Not in 20 years.
I want you here for every fucking frame, Paul.
Well,
we're waiting.
So
is your piss going to be 10 minutes?
Maybe.
Are you scared of this place?
No.
What about room 237?
It's typical of you to create a problem like this when I really end my work.
Yeah, that fucking road to the place, I would not want to drive on that road at all. Oh, give me a portion of that thing and I'll have a hell of a
time. It's like...
Fuck that.
It's like a 50-degree slope down, like way down. You don't want to lose control of your vehicle on that fucking road, that's for sure.
Also, that music, the Dies Irae, that it's actually a Catholic... You probably heard it before at a Catholic funeral.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's Catholic funeral music, and they just tweaked it. It's a funeral dirge, yeah.
Even the opening helicopter shot was way more fluid than I would have expected for the time period.
Yeah, but even that's one of the things that kind of just bugs me about Kubrick in general. It's just anybody else could have done a chase shot, could have done anything. Nope, he's got to do 7 fucking passes with a helicopter. to show them driving down the road, to show them that they're far away.
I said this, I think you might have been upstairs when I said this. Like, this bugged me.
Yeah, it's over.
It's one of the things that bugged me.
Yeah,
I have to say though, the one where the helicopter's coming up behind the car,
close and pulled off
as it's going around the curb, and you watch the car continue on the road, but the camera just keeps going off the fucking cliff.
Yeah,
you know, I thought that was a nice touch, just to give you an idea. Like, we're about to go off the fucking cliff here; things are not going to go well. You know, little subtleties like that. He's like, this is shit.
I don't think it's shit. I just don't think it's necessary.
So
I think I think it's padding. I think it's Kubrick saying, "Look what I've got. Look what I can do."
Necessary?
Bring me a helicopter.
Yeah, exactly.
Why? For the opening scene, we're going to use it again. No.
Is it necessary for me to drink my own urine? No, but I do it anyway because it's sterile and I like the taste.
Did they give you any idea in Denver about what the job entails?
Only in a very general way.
Well, the winters can be fantastically cruel. The basic idea is to cope with the very costly damage and depreciation which can occur.
And this consists mainly of running the boiler, heating different parts of the hotel on a daily rotating basis, repairing damage as it occurs, and doing repairs so that the elements can't get a foothold.
Well, that sounds fine to me.
Physically, it's not a very demanding job. The only thing that can get a bit trying up here during the winter is the tremendous sense of isolation. For some people, solitude and isolation can of itself become a problem.
Not for me.
So, could anybody here do this job? What was it, October to...
Oh, fuck no.
October to May?
Basically from November 1st to May 1st.
So that's...
5 months.
Yeah, 7 months.
Without internet?
Well, this was pre-internet. Lots of books, right? Lots of books. They had a dartboard. They had a pool table. That might last a month.
The TV still had stuff.
They had an arcade, too. They had
arcade, yeah. So much...
They had a bar.
Food, bar, no booze. And tables for euchre. We'd have been fine. We'd have been good.
Yeah, but okay.
With an ashtray on every fucking table.
And all, and based on the conversation at dinner, all you fuckers would be happy because they had a shit ton of pickles.
Yes.
Woo! And Oreo cookies.
Don't worry, Helen, they had lots of lamb.
Big jars of peanut butter.
There's one other thing I think we should talk about. I don't want to sound melodramatic, but it's something that's been known to give a few people second thoughts about the job.
I'm intrigued.
I don't suppose they... told you anything in Denver about the tragedy we had up here during the winter of 1970?
I don't believe they did.
My predecessor in this job hired a man named Charles Grady as the winter caretaker. And he came up here with his wife and two little girls, I think about 8 and 10. And he had a good employment record, good references. And from what I've been told, I mean, he seemed like a completely normal individual. But at some point, during the winter, he must have suffered some kind of a complete mental breakdown. He ran amok and killed his family with an axe. Stacked them neatly in one of the rooms of the West Wing, and then he put both barrels of a shotgun in his mouth. Police, they thought that it was what the old-timers used to call cabin fever. Kind of claustrophobic reaction which can occur when people are shut in together over long periods of time.
Well, you can rest assured, Mr. Ullman, that's not going to happen with me. And as far as my wife is concerned, I'm sure she'll be absolutely fascinated when I tell her about it.
He almost comes off like a con man. Like the way that he talks to the bartender and the way that he talks when he's applying for the job, and that you almost get the feeling he's the kind of guy that can talk himself into a situation and then it just falls apart when he can't follow through. Yeah.
Tony, do you think Dad'll get the job?
He already did. He's gonna phone Wendy up in a few minutes to tell her.
Even at the beginning of the film, Tony, you know, is telling him, yeah, he got the job. He's going to call mom in a few minutes and let her know. And sure enough, the phone rings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he's heralding everything. Like he's kind of like getting snapshots of things to come
and
throughout
the entire
film.
And they make you think that he's the focus of the film.
Yes. And he is.
Well, he is, but they make you think like he's the impetus for everything that's happening. It's all focused more on him.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, why don't you want to go to the hotel? I don't know. You do too know. Now come on, tell me. Don't want to. Please. No. Tony, tell me.
Favorite scene, nude?
Oh, without a doubt, the blood gushing from the elevators.
That is cool.
Yeah.
I don't.
Probably one of the best. One of my.
I want to know how they did it.
But which version? Because every time you see it, something different happens, right?
All of them. I like.
It was only filmed once, but using different cameras.
Yeah.
So.
On the day of the shoot, the crew topped off the elevator compartment, then set up four cameras to capture the whole bloody affair, each one equipped with a different lens and film speed. It says the camera operators climbing inside oversized wooden chests to avoid being doused in the red liquid that was doubling as human hemoglobin, and they had to work fast because the elevator wasn't going to be able to hold its contents for long. The elevator was starting to leak before the doors actually opened. Once action was called and after Kubrick had evacuated the set, the door slid back, unleashing a furious red tide that swept through the set, carrying furniture in its wake. I tell you, it worked in a way we never thought it would work.
Yeah. Who's that quoted by?
Kubrick.
Oh.
Yeah.
What did they use?
Actual fake blood. I don't know what composition.
No, I didn't say it was blood.
When they used that
red
scene...
Red liquid, they called it.
...for the trailer of the film.
Yeah.
And the MPAA went fucking nuts.
Of course.
And he got by it by saying, oh, that's not blood. That's like hydraulic fluid or something.
Right.
Or rusty water. He's like, it's not blood. It's rusty water. And they're like, fine.
Okay, it says here, my God, we're going to drown. When Stanley saw the footage, he was so happy. But at the time it was happening, he couldn't watch.
Oh, yeah. Squeamish. It is one of the best shots in horror. It's one of the most memorable, certainly.
But was that the actual set, though? Like, was that the
they
same
used
spot?
A real set. It wasn't a miniature. That was a real set they used. They drowned the set.
Boy, we must really be high up. The air feels so different.
Mm-hmm.
Dad?
Yes?
I'm hungry.
Well, you should have eaten your breakfast.
Jack Torrance is flawed right from the start.
Yeah.
Like, right from the start. He's got it composed at the beginning when he's doing the interview and they're telling him what the job entails. But, like, the first time you see him with his family, he's in the car, and you can just tell that he's not happy to be with these people.
No, he's pissed at his son because his son didn't eat breakfast.
He loathes his family.
You get a sense he's on a downward trajectory because he was a teacher. Not a teacher anymore. They don't discuss why. We get a sense that he was probably fired from teaching. And then he's trying to be a writer. Now he's a caretaker. And what was he saying? If that failed... Shoveling driveways.
Working a car wash.
Working a car wash. Would you like that?
In Denver, Colorado in the middle of winter.
His station in life is just getting worse and worse. He just keeps failing and failing.
I can remember when I was a little boy. My grandmother and I could hold conversations entirely without ever opening our mouths. She called it shiny. And for a long time, I thought it was just the two of us that had the shine to us. Just like you probably thought you was the only one. But there are other folks, though mostly they don't know it or don't believe it.
I do like how Halloran kind of like has a conversation with Danny, like, hey, how's it going? Oh, by the way, you know you're pretty special, right? You know, like, you ever see things? Things that haven't happened yet, things to come. You know, there's more of us that
do
that.
You like Gladiator movies?
You know, you know.
Why don't you want to talk about it?
I'm not supposed to.
Who says you ain't supposed to?
Tony.
Who's Tony?
Tony's a little boy that loves my mom.
Is Tony the one that tells you things?
Yes.
Has Tony ever told you anything about this place? About the Overlook Hotel?
I don't know.
Now think real hard, Doc. Think.
Is there something bad here?
Well, you know, Doc, when something happens, it can leave a trace of itself behind. Not things that anyone can notice, but things that people who shine can see. I think a lot of things happen right here in this particular hotel. Over the years, and not all of them was good.
What about room 237?
Room 237?
You're scared of room 237, ain't you?
No, I ain't.
Mr. Allen, what is in room 237?
Nothing. There ain't nothing in room 237. But you ain't got no business going in there anyway. So stay out. You understand? Stay out.
The big part of the story is that Danny has this ability.
Yeah.
And he meets somebody in the Overlook that has the same ability, that's like, hey, we got the same thing, you know, don't be afraid of it kind of deal. Oh, by the way, stay out of that fucking room. You got no Which business indoors. Being in there. With a big wheel in that place all by yourself would be fucking fun as hell.
Oh, yeah.
I like the touches where it was no sound on the carpet. And then
yeah.
Sound.
And then,
yeah.
That was really cool.
I was thinking that, too.
Creepy little twin those, girls.
Yeah. Who, come by the way, are real. I've seen them at conventions. They are that creepy in real life.
Come and play with us, Danny. Forever.
And ever.
And ever. And ever. Oh, by the way, we're dead.
Yeah.
Hey. Weather forecast said it's going to snow tonight.
What do you want me to do about it?
Oh, come on, hon. Don't be so grouchy.
I'm not being grouchy. I just want to finish my work.
But yeah. I will say this, though. I do appreciate, as Helen said, how long it takes for him to unspool. Like, he wasn't a great guy to begin with, but he doesn't flip out within a week or so. You do get a sense of being trapped in this place for a long period of time.
Yeah, but at the same time, they don't show any of him being normal over that period. Like, they pick up it, okay, and here's where the wheel's starting to wobble.
They start month in, and he's already cracked and swearing at her.
Wendy, let me explain something to you. Whenever you come in here and interrupt me, you're breaking my concentration. You're distracting me. And it will then take me time to get back to where I was. Understand?
Yeah.
And I will honestly say, Shelley Duvall in this movie, the least graceful human being I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I mean, right from the hop, she's wearing reds and fucking blues. Her wardrobe is fucking horrible.
Yeah.
And they, like, she looks disheveled, and she's kind of aloof, and she's, I mean, I hate to be rude, but she's kind of odd looking.
Yeah,
she's, you know, like, obviously I think they casted her because it's like, if I was stuck with Shelley Duvall in the Overlook, I'd probably lose my fucking mind too. If she was Christy fucking Brinkley, it wouldn't work, right?
Well, that's the thing. I think that they cast her because, and again, not to sound cruel, not to sound mean, but it's very easy to believe that this is a damaged person.
Mm-hmm.
Just by the way she carries herself, by the way she moves, by her looks, unfortunately. And so it's very easy to believe that.
Like, you could see if it was, like, cast 10 years ago or 15 years ago, it may have been, like, Amanda Plummer or somebody playing that part. I mean, somebody who's kind of waifish and damaged and fragile, right? Awkward, unsure.
We're going to make a new rule. Whenever I'm in here, you hear me typing. Whether you don't hear me typing, what the fuck you hear me doing in here, when I'm in here, that means that I am working. That means don't come in. Now, do you think you can handle that?
Yeah.
Fine. Why don't you start right now and get the fuck out of here?
She definitely looked like she was the victim of, like, domestic
abuse. I was going to say, it's never said, but I would easily believe that he would.
Like, she demurred around him. She was working around him. This was not, like, even when he was, like, freaking out, telling her to get the fuck out of the room, when he was there, when he was typing
she
that.
Acquiesced,
yeah. She's apologizing.
She was, like, this is not the first time that he has spoken to her this way.
She was definitely a battered woman. He's already said, get the fuck out of here because I'm trying to write. Do you know what this is? That whole scene is painful to watch because he's such an ass.
Oh, yeah. Jack Torrance is an asshole throughout the entire film. He's an asshole.
But that was the first time we see him as truly intimidating and terrible. That was the first sign that he was a real piece of shit, was that moment when he told her to get the fuck out of here while he's trying to write. from that moment on, the next scene is her and her son watching television, and Daddy's like, can I go get my fire truck? Your daddy's just laying down. You don't need to get it right now, do you? And we realize why she's saying that is because, don't bother him if he's sleeping, because we've seen what he's like now. You don't want to wake him up. So he finally says, I'll be really quiet, I'll tiptoe. And he's like, well, all right, but you have to be very quiet. So now we're already on edge thinking he's going to wake him up and he's going to just go ballistic, right? Because he got pissed off when he found his papers on the ground. How pissed off is he going to be if his son wakes him? To go in there and to subvert our expectations and just show that he's been awake the whole time, just staring out the window aimlessly, what a creepy shot that was.
Yeah, it's also that apprehension. It's the term they, you know, for people who are in abusive relationships. It's that walking on eggshells.
Oh, it is. And to send Danny in there, knowing that that's a possibility, is terrifying.
Dad?
Yes?
Do you feel bad?
No. Just a little bit tired.
Then why don't you go to sleep?
I can't. I got too much to do.
Not just that, but when he picks him up and puts him on his knee, like, Danny looks like he'd rather be anywhere else but on his father's knee.
Well, he walks into, like, he walks through the door, makes it a couple steps, and as soon as he realizes that he's up and awake, he freezes.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, can I get my fire truck? But when he picks him up and puts him on his knee, like, the kid's just, like, staring off into space, like,
they're
oh
both
boy.
Staring in different directions,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when he, and he's, you know, you like it here? I like it here.
Are you having fun?
Dad? You would never hurt Mommy or me, would ya?
What do you mean? Did your mother ever say that to you? That I would hurt you?
No, Dad.
You sure?
Yes, Dad.
You wouldn't hurt Mommy and me, would you? It's like, why the fuck would you ask me that? You know, did your mom put you up to that question? I know all about that shit. Oh, I know all about that shit. Did your mom put you up? Did your mom say that? Mm. Been there, done that.
I love you more than anything else in the whole world. I would never do anything to hurt you. Never. You know that, don't you?
Yes, Dad.
Horrible dream I ever had.
It's okay now. Really.
Well, I dreamed that I killed you and Danny. But I didn't just kill you. I cut you up into little pieces. Oh, my God. I must be losing my mind.
When he comes into the room, after he has that horrible dream of cutting him up into pieces,
yeah.
and she's trying to console him, and then he comes, Danny comes into the room, and he's all disheveled, he's got bruises, not saying anything. She originally thinks that there's nobody else there.
Right.
It must have been the dad that did it.
You did this to him. Didn't you? You son of a bitch! You did this to him. Didn't you? How could you?
Like Nick was saying, most of the time she demurs. She's very cautious around him, and she'll do anything to diffuse what's happening. But when she thinks that Danny's been hit, or that Jack has hit Danny or strangled Danny, that's when she loses it.
Oh, Jack! Thank God you're here, Jack. There's someone else in the hotel with us.
There's a crazy woman in one of the rooms. She tried to strangle Danny.
I know, how creepy it would be, too, when she approaches him saying, you know, how did you get those marks on your neck? And she thinks there's a woman in the hotel that's been standing there all this time.
Well, that's what the kid's telling her.
Yeah.
Right?
How creepy. That the safe place where you've been, you know, preparing your lunches and spending your meals and your whole family's there to find out that somebody's been there that whole friggin' time. There's calls coming from inside the house.
Are you out of your fucking mind?
Are you out of your fucking mind?
No! It's the truth, really! I swear it! Danny told me! He went up into one of the bedrooms. The door was open and he saw this crazy woman in the bathtub. She tried to strangle him!
Which room was it?
I maintain it's the 9,000-year-old hag in the bathtub.
Well, what's odd about her is that it's different areas of the body that have rotted because of the way she was laying in the tub or something, because it's not...
It's supposed to be like bed sores, but she wouldn't have bed sores in the bathtub.
No. I don't know. So. It looked weird. I've never seen decay quite that mottled. It didn't look right to me. No. I don't know what they were going for. It almost looked like pond scum on her or something. It didn't look...
She's just an old hag.
Water damage.
Yeah.
I think they were just going for, how would you react if you just realized you were making out with that?
Yeah. No wonder he wouldn't say.
Well, and okay.
Understandable.
And he comes back from the situation, haven't seen a damn thing. It's like, what?
Well, the lights are on.
Yeah, but would you admit it? Like, hey, by the way, made out with this hot chick, and all of a sudden she's fucking decayed into like a 7,000-year-old.
Maybe come back and say, yeah, there's something here.
Hey, I made out with fucking Methuselah over here. Let's go.
Methuselah.
What do they call you around here, Jeezy?
Grady's, Delbert Grady.
Grady?
Yes, sir.
Delbert Grady.
That's right, sir.
Mr. Grady, haven't I seen you somewhere before?
Well, no, sir. I don't believe so.
I like when the butler or whatever, the waiter... spills drink on him. He's like, yeah, I'll clean you up. And just casually, you're not thinking of anything. And then he's like, yeah, it's Grady. And he's thinking, it's like, Delbert Grady? Yeah, that's right. Don't I know you? And he's just kind of prying at him. And then he's like, yeah, you were the caretaker here. I like Grady's transition from subservient to, like, by the end of the conversation, he's cold.
Mr. Grady. You were the caretaker here. I recognize you. I saw your picture in the newspapers. You, chopped your wife and daughter up into little bits. And then you blew your brains out.
I'm sorry to differ with you, sir. But you are the caretaker. You've always been the caretaker. I should know, sir. I've always been here.
That's my favorite scene. Just that switch in him where he's, oh, no, sir, you got me confused with somebody else. I'm sorry, sir.
And then he drops the illusion.
He drops it completely and he's starting to tell him, you know.
Did you know, Mr. Torrance, that your son is attempting to bring an outside party into this situation? Your son has a very great talent. I don't think you are aware how great it is, but he is attempting to use that very talent against your will.
My wife and my children were, you know... They needed to be corrected.
My girls, sir, they didn't care for the Overlook at first. One of them actually stole a pack of matches and tried to burn it down. But I corrected them, sir. And when my wife tried to prevent me from doing my duty, I corrected her.
That's definitely my favorite spot there, is when she's looking for him with the bat, knows something's wrong, and then just, let's take a sneak peek at what he's been writing, and it's all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy over and over and over.
Well, it starts with what's already in the typewriter, then he's got all his...
His leaves, like 300 fucking pages of it, and she's just kind of like 1, 2, 3, 5, 10...
But it's different variations of it. It's not just one continuous sentence.
Different.
You know, he's capitalized it some places. He's left letters out other places.
Sometimes he's things out of margin. Sometimes it's just dull boy that's capitalized.
He's indented it different places. So
he writes it like a sentence.
Dull boy is one word.
Yeah.
The best part of that is the fact that she's realizing, oh boy, not only has this guy been snapped, he's been snapped for a long time. Fucking time.
Yeah.
And I'm stuck here with him. So, you know, me and my kid are stuck here with this guy that's been fucking gonzo.
Well, that's the moment that caused Shelley Duvall's mental breakdown. That shot was done. It was
the days. Of
days and days of shooting.
Pages, those pages.
And she just snapped.
How do you like it? How do you like it?
When he walks onto set, that is an amazing shot.
Just kind of into frame.
Into frame, but he's completely in silhouette. He is solid black because of the lighting. He looks like more like a specter than human.
How do you like it?
And it isn't until the camera shoots from the other side that he's lit and you can see his face.
Yeah.
But from the back, he's just a black figure. That's it. There's no color, nothing there. Like, he's a perfect silhouette. It's really well done.
Has it ever occurred to you that I have agreed to look after the Overlook Hotel until May the 1st? Does it matter to you at all that the owners have placed their complete confidence and trust in me, and that I have signed a letter of agreement, a contract, in which I have accepted that responsibility? You have the slightest idea what a moral and ethical principle is, do you? Has it ever occurred to you what would happen to my future if I were to fail to live up to my responsibilities? Has it ever occurred to you? Has it?
Stay away from me.
Why?
I just want to go back to my room.
Why?
Well, I'm very confused.
I would say probably at least if we're looking for a character that shows any emotion in a Kubrick film, this may have the one performance that has the most emotion. That would be Shelley Duvall's character.
Yeah, and as you and I were talking about before, that's another reason I hate this.
Yeah.
Because the one character, the one person he gets emotion from is the person that you were essentially watching her be abused on screen.
Tortured.
She was mentally tortured to the point where she's legitimately got mental issues now because of what happened to her in this film.
Yeah, what you're watching when you're watching the final cut of this film is a woman having a real nervous breakdown.
Don't hurt me.
I'm not going to hurt you.
Stay away from me.
Wendy.
Stay away.
Darling, light of my life. I'm not going to hurt you. You didn't let me finish my sentence. I said, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your brains in. I'm gonna bash him right the fuck in.
Stay away from me. Don't hurt me.
I'm not gonna hurt you.
Stay away from me.
Give me the bat.
Stay.
Give me the bat. Oh, God damn.
That stuntman earned his pay.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Man. There was no edits there. That guy fell the whole way down after landing on his shoulders. He lit, like, that was right on the collarbone.
It was a good fall.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. And just that's where things kind of shift between them. Because immediately after that, you see her, this is happening now. She just drags his ass and, like, you know, and puts him in a food pantry. It's like, there's no, like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, you know, like, that's where she's basically like, fuck this noise, I'm out.
Wendy?
I'm gonna go now.
Wendy?
Yes?
You've got a big surprise coming to you. You're not going anywhere. Go check out the snowcat in the radio and you see what I mean.
Go see how fucked you really are, woman. I'll just sit here and eat some cookies and have a nap.
Go check it out. Go check it out.
Honestly, I'd make a nest out of bags of rice and do the exact same thing. I'm just like, well, if I'm locked in here, at least I'm locked in with, you know,
cooking. Make it work.
I got snacks.
Yep.
I see you can hardly have taken care of the business we discussed.
No need to rub it in, Mr. Grady. I'll deal with that situation as soon as I get out of here.
I fear you will have to deal with this matter in the harshest possible way, Mr. Torrance.
There's nothing I look forward to with greater pleasure, Mr. Grady.
It's a haunted film. It's definitely haunted. Somebody let him out of that fucking
Again, you never see it. You never see it. No.
And somebody put the finger marks on Danny's throat from room 237, so...
When he's still under the trance of Tony, and he grabs the knife, and he's doing the red rum,
That thing. Part's actually really creepy.
Yeah, because...
The way his voice goes is really creepy.
And when he writes on the door, because you see red rum on the door, there's flashes of that throughout the entire film.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you watch him actually write it out in the lipstick on the door, and then wake up his mom. It's so she wakes up, and the first thing she sees is him holding this knife. Like, what the hell are you doing? And grabs him, gives him an embrace, and then looks in the mirror to see murder.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck, man? Like,
Apparently, when he's hacking through that door, they went through several doors to get the effect they wanted, because they would splinter too quickly.
Yeah, he was...
Because interior doors in a hotel room aren't that sturdy.
He was a volunteer firefighter back in those days, so he knew how to put an axe through a door, so he was going through the doors too quick.
Right.
They were just turning into splinters, like, within one or two blows, and they're like, hold on, we need this to last a good 30 seconds at least.
So we need this to look good.
Wendy, I'm home.
Hey, I have to say, a runner-up for me, though, again, is with Shelley Duvall, is when she's hunkering in the corner, and the camera has the door to the left, and she knows he's coming through the door with the axe, and she's going nuts, but how her mania ramps up, and as soon as the actual head of the axe makes it through the door, she fucking pops.
It's one of the most iconic scenes in horror
films. Yeah, like, she fucking pops.
Like, even without that "here's Johnny" line, like, just the look on her face, there's, you like, see that in countless horror, like, in compilations of horror.
No, but, like, yeah, there's the big key moments that everybody knows that makes the highlight reels that I've done a face swap on my phone for. Yeah, like, there are good moments in this movie. Like, yeah, like, the whole shot of, you know, like, the "here's Johnny" where he goes through the door with the axe and she's there in terror clutching the knife and that. Like, yeah, that's a...
"Here's Johnny!"
That's a great moment in that movie. And Shelley Duvall sells the shit out of it.
Yeah, poor Scatman Crothers. Ah, I'm gonna go and save the day. Wham! Before you even know what the fuck's wrong, he's got an axe to the chest, and he's down for the count.
You can't see him wildly swing axes at doors and not see the axe get embedded in someone. That's just horror and logic.
How didn't he see it coming is the question. He's got The Shining, right?
Yeah.
He's seen all the other shit happen. He didn't see that coming?
That's a good question. Like, you can see the future, you see things to come, you know, something horrible's happening there, but you can't see your own demise.
Yeah.
So, like the sheriff...
Shining Veil...
I was going to say, like the sheriff in Misery, all last-minute rescues or third-act rescues in Stephen King are utterly worthless.
Doomed to fail.
False hope just gets dashed out instantly.
Great party, isn't it?
And she's running into all sorts of fucking shit at the end of the film.
Yeah.
She's
going through
the nothing that physically affects her, though.
No, no, just some weird imagery. Like, the guy with the, like, almost looked like his face was split. Yeah, he split.
Had, like, an axe wound in the face.
Yeah. Or a great potty.
The bear and the blowjob.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck that was about. That's one of those things you wish you could unsee. It's now it's a classic. Oh, remember that scene where the bear's
blowing the guy,
filleting the old man? It's like, no, no, did I see that?
You can't get away! I'm right behind you!
And I think another iconic piece is Danny going through the snow in the maze.
Yes.
And him chasing after him.
That would actually be my second favorite scene. Not so much, I mean, that scene obviously, like, you know, the chase or whatever. I like the mentality of the kid to cover his tracks and to wipe out the snow and then kind of hide off into the corner. Like, that's a... smart thing, especially for a 7-year-old or 9-year-old or whatever he is.
They set that ending up incredibly well, because early on she invites him to take him for a walk. He refuses because already he's starting to go. So she takes Danny for a walk, which is why they know the layout of the maze, because they've been through it before, because they go on walks together.
Well, you see him at one point where he's looking down at the model of the maze, and he's losing his mind at that point because he thinks he sees
them
walking through it.
But he doesn't record it, so he doesn't really know the maze because he doesn't pay attention. Where they know the maze, which is why Danny, I suspect, went in there in the first place, because he knows the maze, he doesn't. So
I don't think he memorized it, but...
I mean,
he wouldn't have made it out nearly as quickly if he wasn't following his own footsteps.
Yeah. But they also set up the time frame, because they're like, I wouldn't bother going in there unless I had an hour to kill, which is a terrible thing if you're dying from exposure.
Yeah.
So if he can't find his way out and Danny can, that's the only edge he has. So it was smart. I think they set that up really well. So they give you enough little bits of information about the film that I think it works as an ending.
Torrance is a horrible villain. I just noticed that.
He's incompetent.
Yeah, he is a horrible villain.
He's utterly incompetent.
You're
as a villain.
Noticing that now?
He was given a second chance and he fucked it up.
I'm telling everybody know where I am right now with my axe.
To quote Cabin in the Woods, how hard is it to kill fucking 9-year-olds?
The only person he succeeded in killing was the person that he was not supposed to kill.
First time I saw this, though, when it cut to him frozen, he's got the look, scared the hell out of me. I wasn't expecting that. I'm like, oh, what the fuck is that?
But at the end of the film.
At the end, when he's like, it just cuts to him frozen and looking all fucking frozen.
Right.
And not very good. I'm like, what the fuck? It was jarring. I'm like, holy shit, what the fuck? Yeah, he's froze to death.
So, okay, theories about the hotel. Does the hotel collect people? Do they add them to the history as they collect them?
The ending is kind of like, what the fuck? But at some point, he tells Wendy, he's like, you know what, the first time I was here, I felt for sure I'd been here before.
And
he even
says it's more than deja vu.
Yeah, it's like, there's deja vu, but I knew, like, every corner I went around, what was going to happen, what it was going to be like, kind of deal. It was really strange. Yeah,
I think the hotel adds you to its history, that it lures you in and you become part of it. I think it's grabbing people. All the people in that photo are people that's probably lured in and collected over the years.
The end is...
very ambiguous.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation about what it is. Like, maybe... because that was 1921. It's like 60 years after.
Right.
It could have been a reincarnation.
Yep.
It could have been anything.
He could have been added to the photo after he died outside.
You know, like maybe an ancestor was there and they, like, called him back or something like that. Who knows?
But, I mean, the reason I think... people get trapped in hotels. I think that's why the maze is there. I think a maze is a good metaphor for how the hotel functions. It lures you in, and then you can't get out.
Hotel California.
Yeah, exactly. It was in the back of my mind the entire time.
As far as my wife is concerned, I'm sure she'll be absolutely fascinated when I tell her about it. She's a confirmed ghost story and horror film addict.
Alright, well, let us score this film. Let's start with Nude.
I'll give it a 7.5.
7.5?
Yeah.
Okay, expand.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like the creepy hotel. I like the effects. I love Jack Nicholson, though, so that's my points are mostly for him, and he plays crazy so well. No, it was, it was great. Good movie. I'd watch it again. I've watched it several times. Big fan.
Your wife appears to be stronger than we imagined, Mr. Torrance. Somewhat more resourceful.
Paul B. Score it.
I'm going to give it a 1. No, I'm going to give it a 7.
7?
Half a point lower than Helen. I'm not a fan. I understand that it's important for horror reasons and all that. Shelley Duvall, I think, is the best character in the film. Her performance is the best in the film. I really think it's way overindulgent. So, like, that scene we just replayed there with
Scatman Crothers.
Like, why? Why are we watching his progression of horror for fucking 40 minutes, it seems like? A lot of it I like, a lot of it dislike. I don't think... I really don't believe it's one of the greatest horror films of all time and blown up to be all the time.
It's not your top 10?
No, not even my top 50, but... It's not very frightening. There's no real... I think now, because it's been so... I mean, every one of the big jumps have been seen a trillion and a half times and spoofed and whatever, so... I think maybe if you'd seen it in 1980,
there would have been moments of tension, though.
I think if you'd seen it in 1980, it would have been very, very, it would have been more impactful. But after seeing it, you know, 40 years later, and all those scenes that were so impactful back then, kind of lose it a little bit now. The elevator scene, you know, stuff like that, the twins. So I think the story's flawed. King himself has admitted he was coked out of his mind when he wrote it. I'm not a big fan of Kubrick, but I respect elements of it.
Mom? Yeah? You really want to go and live in that hotel for the winter?
Sure I do. It'll be lots of fun.
Nick, score it!
I'm going to give it 6.5. I appreciate the technical aspects of it, but... what's the one? It's like a YouTube channel. I think it's called Every Frame a Painting. In my mind, not every frame has to be a painting. And he tries to make everything in this movie symbolic for something.
That's his style.
And it just this time it just comes off as so horribly overindulgent.
Yeah.
Like, okay, elevator full of blood. Okay, cool. Was it a cool shot? Absolutely. What does it add to this story? How does it tie into anything that's been established at any point in this movie? It's just there for the sake of being there. People, I find, with this movie spend more time and effort trying to attach symbolism and meaning to a lot of the things that are in it because it's never really given any clear meaning, which I suppose in its own way is a fun little thought experiment. For all I know, he could have made this movie just to fuck with everybody, and mission accomplished. But performances are good. Technical aspects of this movie are good. The set is good. There's so many things. Like, it's like one of those examples of where you can have so many things that are good, but it doesn't necessarily make, in my mind, what is a great movie.
Good man. You set him up and I'll knock him back, Lloyd. One by one.
Yeah.
Brian Stewart scored?
I'm going to actually match Helen 7.5. I probably enjoyed it more than Paul and Nick, but I probably appreciate Kubrick a little bit more than they do. He's not the director that Hitch is, because Hitch had characters I cared about.
I want to punch you so hard.
Most of this goes to atmosphere and look. Everything, whenever I go back to thinking about this movie, it's always images that strike me as impressive. Like you say, he's great for grabbing perfect images. Like, this guy would be great for designing poster art for things.
Yeah, like set design and stuff like that was great. Yeah.
I love his long camera angles. I like his sense of the depth in those hallway shots and in the main foyer when he perches his camera up above the actors with that bird's eye view of the main hallway. That it just gorgeous, beautiful camera shots. And also career performances from Duvall and from Nicholson. I mean, you can't talk about their film careers and not mention this. This is like a career highlight moment for both of them. But apart from their two performances and the look of the film, it is lacking something.
Yeah.
It's not Fright Night to me. It's not Halloween to me.
It's not fun.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be fun.
No, it's not. It's
but there's also it's joyless. There we go.
Yeah, it's
there is no joy in Mudville in this picture. No.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a little bit of revel in Nicholson's performance when he confronts Shelley Duvall after she's flipping through the manuscript. There's a bit of, you can see telltale signs of the Joker to come.
Yeah.
Where he's just barely reining it in, and that's kind of fun, because a villain that's enjoying being villainous is always a good thing, but there's not enough of that. It comes too little, too late in a movie that's already 2 hours long. So,
2.5.
A lot of reason this movie fails is because, once again, it fails on the page first. It's not a very good Stephen King story. It's got a crappy villain that fails miserably at everything he intends to do for the entire movie. He's a failure as a human being. He's a terrible father. He's a wife-abusing piece of shit who gets locked in a hotel and goes nuts after 5 months and goes back to drinking. I don't understand what this movie is supposed to be about. I don't really get what the overall message is supposed to be. Don't self-isolate if you're halfway crazy or if you have a drug or an alcohol problem. I don't know. But again, it's like, I appreciate the 10 pounds of atmosphere they crammed into that 5-pound bag, and I like the performances, but otherwise it's not a particularly good story. That when we don't understand the haunting element, the movie fails, because unless we know what we're dealing with and how we're supposed to deal with it, it's the a failing rules. Of the film. There are no rules to this. The haunting element could be a flailing bear, or it could be some guy with a head wound, or it could be some crazed bartender. We don't know what's going on.
Egg in the bathtub.
Just Indian burial ground. That's enough. That's all we need to say, and that'll cover all the cracks in what is just random supernatural.
I still maintain, if this wasn't Kubrick and Nicholson, people would not have the same affection for it that they do.
I and others have come to believe that your heart is not in this, that you haven't the belly for it.
I will give it 8.5.
Ooh.
Wow.
If it was half an hour less and just as powerful, I'd probably give it a 9, 9.5, but I'll give it an 8.5 because it is a long film. But, I mean, love him or hate him, Kubrick was a fucking genius. And it is very rare when somebody of his ilk brings himself down to the horror level and crafts a film like this. How many horror films were made by geniuses that were like, had been making films besides Hitchcock? Don't fucking say it, Brian.
He's never made a horror film ever.
Oh, bullshit. What are you saying, okay? I saw the look out of the corner of his eyes. Every so often you get a genius director who will bring himself to this genre and give you a highly stylized horror film, and that's what The Shining is. And I think that is why this film is on a lot of top 10 lists, because of the weight of Kubrick behind it. This was like Orson Welles' Citizen Kane coming to give us a fucking horror movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, I thought it was brilliant.
How about your wife and son? How do you think they'll take to it?
They'll love it.
And that, my friends, is the final episode in our year-long theme covering haunted places. We finish with Stanley Kubrick's The Shining. If you've never seen this film, I would be very surprised. We hope you enjoyed our critical treatment of this classic horror, and hope you enjoyed this entire year's theme. It was fun. We covered a great range from old school to contemporary features. We threw in some snoozers to shake it up. We've got no plans for a theme next year. I think we're going to keep it open. We've had some good recommendations from our listeners, really good recommendations that we are seriously considering should be an excellent year for Horror 101. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, the nefarious Paul B., and my wife, the lovely Nude, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you to have an excellent new year. You thought I was going to say something else, right? Don't lie. You know, you thought I was going to say something else.
So how did it go? Oh, literally, first time it snowed, he tried to kill his family.
Yeah,